Eoch Tanuyap, Kwiget Iwans, Kwiens Na. Hi everybody, my name is Kwiget Iwans. I'm a member of the Squamish Nation and the Yogalanis clan of the Haida Nation. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We live, work, play, and broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
You're listening to Canada's The Guess Who with American Woman. For some reason, this song has a different meaning this week. As the terrible events unfolded in Washington, D.C., I was trying to empathize with the people I was watching storm the buildings there in Washington, but they have a very different frame of reference from mine. Their reality distortion field seems driven by alt-right conspiracies, white privilege, and hate, fueled by opportunistic, tyrannical leaders. And this is not the world I live in. I'm living in the world of Each for All, the cooperative connection, broadcasting from the unceded, traditional, and ancestral territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. This is CFRO 100.5 FM in Vancouver, live online at cooperadio.org. Tonight, we're going to be relishing in our own reality distortion field here, in the cooperative sector, and we're going to finish off our retrospective look back at the stories we covered in 2020. That'll be in the second half of our show tonight. If you missed any of these episodes and want to listen again, check out our website, eachforall.coop. Leading us off tonight, we'll be kicking off 2021 with a visit from a dear friend. Zoe Creighton is the coordinator of the Upper Columbia Cooperative Council, located in Nelson, BC. She is an instrumental leader in the cooperative development in BC and a longtime director of the BC Cooperative Association. That's where we first met. She also spearheaded the development of Kootenai Co-op Radio, our sister station, in 1997. She joined me for a call yesterday, and it was very exciting to hear all the new online programs the UCCC and the BC Co-op Association have been working on, as well as the new plans for co-op developers in the province. It is wonderful and inspiring to hear how cooperatives are getting more and more traction as people seek solutions to their needs and work together to meet them. If you're listening to us tonight, welcome to our socialist lefty cooperative bubble. This is our reality distortion field. Hopefully, America will sort its shit out in the coming days and we can feel less immediate impending threat and doom. That said, we're not off the hook here in Canada. I implore you to stop racism, sexism, and injustice wherever you see it. Live your cooperative values of equity, equality, and concern for others. As Edmund Blake said, the only thing necessary for triumph of evil is for good people to do nothing. I'm your host, Robin Puga. You're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on Vancouver Co-op Radio. Thank you so much for making some time tonight, Zoe, to jump on the line and share with our listeners what's going on in the Kootenays during this pandemic.
Indeed. Well, I'll take the opportunity to focus the lens a little bit into what's happening in co-ops, because I could be here for hours telling you what's happening in this part of the world during the pandemic. Continue to be crazy times, right? Like, who was to think that, like, switching one number on a four number year indicator to 2021 would change anything? But it's I'm amazed, as I'm sure some of the people you've been talking to in the last little while, about how, you know, co-ops thrive in adverse situations, right? People decide to start them because they're realizing, I can't actually do this alone. And if that looks like that, then what does something else look like? Oh, let's look at the co-op model. It has a track record and a history. So we've been witnessing and supporting the development of a whole bunch of new co-ops in the last year in a bunch of different sectors. The most, like, it's small, but it's kind of this poster child of what's happening is the one of the co-op council's newest members actually is the Caslow Fitness Co-op, based in Caslow, BC, population not that high. And one would think that a fitness co-op during a pandemic would suffer financially. However, just by the nature of it being a co-op, it actually brand new, they did a business plan, they've tripled their revenue, they've halved their costs, they've quadrupled their membership projections all in the last year. And they've been really diligent about following all of the health protocols. But I guess, you know, people are staying at home. Caslow must have a lot of people who travel away for the winter, and they haven't. And so this new little fitness co-op that could has become kind of the poster child of what co-ops can do, and how people both want to support local enterprises, and how new enterprises that are organized cooperatively can thrive in this kind of environment. So they're a really good example of one thing that's happened. They're the community investment co-ops that I'm sure you've heard of that are blossoming all over this part of the province. Now I think we have the Creston Community Investment Co-op was kind of the original gangster in the sector in this part of the province, and now there are two kind of bigger ones, the West Kootenay Boundary one and the East Kootenay Columbia one, and apparently they've been doing really successfully too, as people, you know, hyper localize everything they're doing, from their living rooms to kind of their local their desire to invest locally. So yeah, there's lots happening, and the list could go on, but I'll pause for a moment.
Well, that's exciting to hear. And I know the Kootenays and Nelson in particular has always been a cooperative hotbed. So it's not entirely surprising to hear that the trend continues there. How are the other existing co-ops doing in that area during this time? Is there anything that's been impactful because of the pandemic there?
I mean, I don't claim to have a finger on the pulse of the bottom lines of the co-ops in sure. the area, but I do, I've been working, like, part of what that we do with the co-op council is kind of, we support the development of emerging co-ops, and then we look for new opportunities for co-ops to develop and kind of try to seed some. And then we also look at, as you said, the hotbedness of local co-ops and try to support them as best we can. And this year, I actually worked, because I'm kind of the main co-op developer behind the council at this point. And remind me to tell you more about how that's going to change soon later, because it's awesome. But I've been working with a couple of local co-ops that are, you know, 20 to 40 years old, one of which is the Kootenay Country Store Co-op that made the news in a not great way by being, you know, the first place where there was, you know, physical violence threatened for someone who didn't want to wear a mask in a retail environment or something. But all that, you know, that made national news. But what they have been doing has been fantastic, is taking this time, you know, I think the pandemic for a lot of people personally has been an opportunity for inward reflection and all that stuff. And I think a lot of organizations are taking the opportunity to do it organizationally as well. And it wasn't, you know, consciously for the Kootenai Country Store Co-op's, you know, mandate to look internally. But it seems that this year has allowed some people the time to do a complete revamp of their rules, which have, you know, they're 40 plus years old. And so I have been working with them for 10 months, and it's been kind of an honor and also a luxury for them to be able to really focus on both kind of clerical tidy ups of, you know, a whole bunch of different boards, you know, kind of Franken amending the rules, so that to do this whole overhaul. And actually their AGM, where they're going to present it to the members for approval, is in a couple of weeks. So I've been lucky enough to be riding along and helping where I can with that process. So
that's exciting.
And the other one, no strangers to your listeners, is Kootenai Co-op Radio. Not that the radio station's not strange, but the fact that it's a radio station. And yeah, I'm sure CFRO has had challenges as well, but you know, these times are rife with people's desires to make sense of them. And often the airwaves are used to make sense of them as well. And so we've had a number of really interesting and challenging times to kind of engage programmers in conversations around what that means to be a licensed broadcaster, albeit community owned, cooperatively owned, and what our responsibilities are for really providing balance on the airwaves in terms of content in, you know, this time that's filled with lack of balance coming from every single corner of the internet and places beyond. So yeah, those are the two co-ops I've been working most most intimately with over this.
Well, it sounds like the radio station there certainly has some interesting stories, and I'm sure you could talk more about it. It is a time when people are really looking for, you know, information out there and not knowing necessarily what to trust. I am curious, how does the co-op, how does it fare with having those hard conversations between, like, are you able to engage all of the, you know, producer members and have a meaningful conversation, like, with that larger group? Or are these really conversations that have to happen at an individual level?
We try, and this, I sit on the policy committee and the programming committee at Kootenai Co-op Radio. And you know, there's kind of the balance of expedience, and also really leaning into our co-op values around transparency and mutual aid and really supporting one another. And I think where it's very different from commercial broadcasters is people, you know, wouldn't be given the time of day if they were breaking a law or breaking a license requirement or something. But I like to think, and people might, you know, think we have done otherwise, but I like to think that we really think of our programmers as people first and as members of our co-op and as owners of our co-op first, and engage them on that level first, until things have to shift a little bit. But I really think that the cooperative nature and the underpinnings of all of the co-op principles and values that kind of are the bedrock of the way we communicate with one another have been really helpful in supporting some of the conversations that have been really difficult to have these days.
Yeah, I imagine so. It's great to hear that you have that that to fall back on as a common understanding for everyone involved. I imagine that makes the conversation a bit easier.
We try.
And so the Upper Columbia Co-op Council is an organization you've been, well, instrumental in forming and working with for many, many years. For our listeners who aren't aware of it, can you give us the elevator pitch on what it is?
Gosh, I wish we had an elevator pitch. That's our next year's, I'm only kidding. We're an association of, I think now we have 22 members, co-ops and credit unions in the southeastern part of the province. And it kind of, I mean, our strategic plan kind of pulses, contracts, and, it, you know, in the pandemic, it's been quite different. We used to convene a lot of public gatherings and do a lot of public events and outreach and kind of physical presence activities to raise awareness of the co-op sector and to encourage people to patronize their co-ops. And if they didn't know what a co-op was, to do that kind of one-on-one conversation on the street kind of stuff. And in the last year, we've kind of, you know, as I was saying a little bit, worked more to how do we support our members, and how do we support the growth of this sector in this part of the province. And it's been a really interesting time because we just spent our 10th year, I think. We're 11 now. It's already been 11 years. looking back at our development, and some co-ops have trickled off, right? So we, you know, I think our highest point was 23 co-ops, but then we've lost a couple. I mean, you and I were talking offline about the demutualization issue, and you know, one of our other poster children of this great worker co-op farm to table restaurant in Cranbrook had to demutualize last year. So we spent a lot of time trying to support them to, you know, figure out the best solution. And as it turned out, the best solution was to not remain a cooperative. So we've been doing a lot of one-on-one stuff, and that's, I would say that's what characterizes the co-op council most specifically these days. But we're also working on a lot of member education and building partnerships with the BC Co-op Association, increasing partnerships. I shouldn't say building, that's, we've always been their kind of little sister since our inception. We've leaned in a little bit more to the Cooperate Now Bootcamp program, which we actually got a nice grant from the Rural Dividend Program at $4.59 on March 31st of last year. Got a phone call, said, so, you know, that grant application that we said we weren't going to honor, how about you would, are you shovel ready? So I said, oh, yes, we are indeed. So we've actually, even though we had shelved it, 10 months later, we're kind of resuscitating it and doing another kick at the can, but this time virtually, with a co-op incubator, social venture incubator program with Nelson and Kootenai based cohorts. And so we started that off by participating more kind of actively in the most recent Cooperate Now cohort, which just finished up in December, based in Vancouver. And we onlineified the whole thing, did it as an 8-week program instead of the usual 4-day intensive in Vancouver.
Wow.
And it was great, such a great opportunity to both turn a program into an online offering. And what we're doing now is kind of getting in touch with all the participants and finding out how it can be better next time for a Kootenai based cohort. So
that's wow, that's super interesting.
Doing, yeah, it's great. And we could, I mean, it's so interesting now too. I'm a mentor for the Co-op Zone, you know, that co-op development program, yeah. The national one. And I'm not sure if you heard, but this year there are 22 participants, I think, 17 of whom are through the CDP program. Was it CDP Canadian? I'm getting my acronyms. They're international participants. So I have two of my mentees are from Malawi and Ulaanbaatar, and they're participants from Indonesia and Rwanda. Like, so it's completely exploded internationally. And we're kind of seeing the opportunity for us to be able to do this co-op education from, you know, BC or even Nelson, but have international students involved. So we're looking at those potentials too, now that we've kind of put the work into putting the curriculum online and working out some bugs around, you know, how to make the presentations engaging and do the kind of flipped model of asynchronous learning and all that stuff. And now we can kind of offer it to the world. If we can figure out the scheduling and language barriers, that'll be one step ahead too.
Well, that's really exciting. And so this is the actual curriculum of the Cooperate Now program that you've now taken totally online. And it, you know, is that a collaborative effort with UCCC and BCCA, and I think Van City is in there as well, right?
Yeah, that's you've named the trifecta. Yeah. And the reason we were in it, I mean, I think BCCA and Van City could have done it very well on their own, but we had a little bit of money behind us. So I actually hired someone here, Danielle Soucy, who was a graduate of the Cooperate Now program. She hauled it to Vancouver 3 years ago and, you know, found place to stay and all that because she was so committed, came back, worked with her group and started a great wood co-op. But she's actually the program assistant and is going to take on the bulk of doing the next cohort in Nelson, based out of Nelson, which is great to have one person who's kind of focused on it and expanding it over the next 6 to 8 months. So,
wow, that's super exciting.
Yeah, it's great. And the, I mean, as Elvie Del Bianco at Van City says, he said, no, I don't think we'll have problems filling seats, right? I think this last cohort had 18 people and it's always oversubscribed. And it's just testament to the fact that there really is a demand for people who are actually actively seeking to. It's not just for kind of people to sit back and ponder the virtues, you know, of starting a co-op. It's people who are, you know, sleeves are rolled up and are already committed to the model and want to know how to do it best. So
really cool.
It's great to be part of that tripod.
And so you mentioned that, now is it the CDF that you're talking about or the CD?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. The Co-op Development Foundation of Canada. And I was curious, are you, in the past, it has been actually physically hosting people from different countries around the world. How does that work during the pandemic?
Oh, I'm not sure about that arm. This is just kind of the CDF, I think, helped to promote the co-op zone, co-op developers training
gotcha.
To their clients. So it opened up that portal. I don't know how that whole part's happening at all, but there was an interesting circle from that, from one of the women I was supporting in Malawi. She was talking about a tool that I never really heard of is the assessment ladder. Do you know that? It's one of CDP's tools that they actually go into the co-ops in these countries and work through. It's kind of an 80-page document or whatever. And I think sometimes it takes a day and sometimes it takes 2 weeks to actually work with the cooperators to kind of get an idea of the health of the co-op. It's kind of like an audit, but it's around organizational health of the co-op. And so this woman said, well, you know, this is what we're working on. And it being a Canadian offering and tool, I was kind of sheepish. And yes, I understand. So immediately researched the heck out of it. And now what we're doing with BCCA and the Co-op Council is adapting it for co-ops in BC to kind of offer. And it's still in the testing stage. We have actually the BC Libraries Co-op that we're working with first to just kind of figure out how it can best work for them. But what an amazing tool to be able to offer. And it might just be self-directed and free, I'm not sure, but I'm thinking started out as a guided thing to kind of go through what are the pain points in your organization and which ones of those are co-op based and which ones aren't, and kind of problem solve together around how to build capacity within the co-op on those levels. So it's, you know, it's like everything's kind of beginning to be more connected in this pandemic. And even though I can't stand being on yet another Zoom call, not today, I'm not talking about this one, but it really is opening doors for finding out stuff that I certainly never knew about and can apply to stuff happening in this part of the province and across the province.
And I'm curious, I know you're no longer on the BC Co-op Association Board, having served your maximum term. Congratulations.
I'm sat out.
and I'm curious what you know about what's going on at the BCCA, aside from, I mean, all the contact that you've had over there. It's now post secondment executive director. What does the new form look like?
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't just even be a fly on the wall and tell you from the inside. All I know is because I'm still on a little contract with them to support co-op development services. So I do know that they have engaged in kind of, I'm showing my like life of acronyms, not able to explode them into a real conversation, but I think it's a management services contract or something with the Alberta Co-op Association. So Paul Sabai, who, you know, everyone who knows about co-ops in Western Canada will have heard his name, or across the country, actually. He is taking responsibility for a bunch of the kind of portfolios of BCCA going forward. Mm-hmm. And he just started this week, so it's fresh off the presses.
Wow.
And it's kind of it's a collective team, staff team now. I think a new communications person was just hired. I think she is based in Vernon or somewhere in the interior in BC. And then there are two, Eva and Marla, who are both based in Vancouver. Paul's in somewhere in Alberta. I don't actually know where he is, but it really became clear that there was way more alignment and affinities between the two associations that could mutually benefit from one shared kind of ED type person. But the BCCA still has a very highly localized team.
Yeah, awesome. We've actually been working with Eva on the radio show here.
Is she involved?
She started her own podcast, and we were promoting it just the other week.
Fantastic.
Staying connected. And so for yourself, I know you're no longer on the BCCA board, but it doesn't sound like you've slowed down at all. What does the next year hold for you?
Gosh, please pass the crystal ball, Robin. I kind of just clumsily fall into all of these like, sure, I'll try that. Yes. Well, the one thing I know is that we are going to make good on this incubator project. So we're going to try to figure out that and how we can expand it for some kind of spring, May, June, maybe even July offering in Nelson, and then even have it go into the fall as well. So we're exploring partnerships that we kind of let go of when we thought the funding didn't happen with SFU's LEAP program and maybe the Purple Incubator program out of Kelowna, to make it kind of a bigger offering with a co-op focus, but kind of open to other social venture organizations. And I just hired an assistant, which is so great. The council employed or used to employ me for 8 hours a week, but now it's only 5 hours a week, and I have an assistant for 3 hours a week, which is awesome. And so it's nice to have a team, and she helps out with the kind of really local clerical stuff and also stuff that she knows tons about that I don't. So I can spend a lot more time kind of thinking with a broader scope with the local relevance kind of stuff. And one thing that we've been doing a lot of is convening this community of practice of co-op developers. It started physically in Vancouver about probably a year and a half ago, and now it's online, and we meet bi-monthly. Wait, does that mean twice a month? Once every 2 months, which is bi-monthly, semi-monthly,
fourth-monthly. I don't know.
Fourth-monthly. Remember I'd said remind me to talk about this later. One of the biggest things is acknowledging the growth of interest in the co-op model over the last 2-3 years and the increase in inquiries that BCCA and VanCity receive. The lack of capacity for experienced co-op developers to support the growth and the establishment, the incorporation, the group development, all that kind of stuff. There's really only a handful of people in BC who are kind of qualified to do that. So this community of practice now is focusing upon mentoring the new generation of, and the generation isn't age-based necessarily, but it's a bunch of people have expressed interest in getting more involved in this space, including existing lawyers and business professionals and stuff who want to have, you know, increase their toolbox of offerings. And so really understand how co-ops work and how they can support them in their own professions. So this community of practice is setting up a mentorship program where the kind of old guard are mentoring the new guard on the projects that we're doing, in the hopes that, you know, a year or two from now, we'll have, you know, 20 or 15 at least, people who are skilled to be able to support the sector in this way. So that's something that I'm focusing on a lot in the next year or two. Yeah.
Well, that's super exciting and really developing the sector. Great to hear.
Yeah. Well, people are keen that people are keen to start co-ops. B, people are keen to make their co-ops work better. And C, people are keen to help. Like, co-op development is, once I fell into it, as I said, but people are seeing it as a career option, right? They're like, oh, okay, so I want to do what you do, but I want to do it full time.
Wow.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, let's support you to do that. Do what I can. And, you know, Melanie Kahn's back in the fold, and Marty Frost is back in the fold, because they see the importance of passing on their knowledge and expertise to kind of a new generation. So it's great. It's an exciting time to be part of it, for sure.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time today. We got to wrap it up there. Looking forward to hearing all of the new stories for 2021 and as the new co-op development mentorship program unfolds. Please do keep us in the loop.
Thanks, Robin. Really nice to talk to you.
You too. Bye, Zoe. That was Zoe Creighton, coordinator of the Upper Columbia Cooperative Council. Find out more about the UCCC at their website, uccc.coop. We'll be right back with a wrap-up of our 2020 retrospective after this station ID and a song from Sarah Harmer, The New Low, on Each for All, The Cooperative Connection.
Hi, this is John Boutte from New Orleans, Louisiana, and you're listening on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Keep on listening, baby. We'll be right back.
That was Sarah Harmer with her new song, New Low, on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Up next, we complete our Each for All team's 2020 retrospective. This turned out to be a two-part series, since we covered so many stories last year. My sincere thanks to our team members. In the next few minutes, you'll hear each of our team, Sandy Goldman, Josh Peterman, Vesta Siachu, and Dale McGladrey. And of course, we would never be here without you, the listeners. My sincere thanks. All right, let's wrap up the year 2020.
So that was my finest montage ever produced for radio. It's kind of nice to have peaked in 2020. But it was interesting to interview such a wide range of people, so informed from different aspects of the discussion as well. So I really do appreciate you, Sandy, getting all those people lined up. It was also interesting to come right at the end of having studied the Cooperative Bank out of the UK, which went through a similar collapse of its cooperative nature and demutualization. So having the vocabulary to talk about it, and also having all of these really informed people to speak about the specifics, I really felt that that show came together interestingly and really succinctly. So I do feel like that was some good work, and I really can't thank you enough for helping make that.
Well, and reality. You know, people were as we are very passionate about that, the demise of MEC and the way it was done in secret and not consulting, you know, where's the democratic one member, one vote? You never got, you know, it just defied so many of the cooperative principles. And we heard from one of the founding members and other people who were, you know, raising money and taking them to court. And, you know, it was a tremendous effort of many, many people that we didn't speak to, but people who participated in the GoFundMe campaign. I mean, it was really a great community effort. And you felt robbed. I haven't shopped there since. I'm not going there.
I haven't either.
Yeah. I'm not going back.
No, and it'll be interesting to see, because from all I'm hearing, it's not a story that's completely over yet. So what happens to members' information, whether this venture capitalist firm gets the information about, you know, 5 million Canadians who shopped and their shopping habits, that should be interesting to hear.
Right.
I do want to push it along here, though. That story, as we say, it continues. We also had another very interesting interview from Vesta with Seth Klein. He's one of the founders of the Policy Alternatives group in Canada. And Vesta, do you want to speak to Seth's new book, A Good War?
Yeah, sure. Very, very different themes. It is more tangentially cooperated than directly. Mm-hmm. It's sort of talking about climate change, basically, and how his argument is that the government and we all should treat climate change as a war and invest the appropriate amount of resources into tackling that war. And so I don't know, I just felt like an interesting discussion to have, especially in times of COVID, because of the government's response to COVID and how that compares to the government's response to the climate crisis. And I actually have a little clip about that that I would like to play.
Here goes.
We have flattened but failed to bend the curve in terms of lowering our emissions. And if we continue on this path, we're fried. And, you know, I look at a chart like that, and it's a manifestation of Einstein's famous definition of insanity, like to keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. We need a new approach, a new mindset. And in some ways, you know, I wrote the whole book before the pandemic, of course. I actually had shipped it off for final copy edit 3 days before the pandemic. But the pandemic experience reaffirms the core notions in the book. And it's given us all this reminder, yes, this is what it looks and feels like and sounds like when our governments actually treat an emergency as an emergency, right? I mean, we can quibble over the details of the policy designs or some of the calls, but there's no disputing that the government's treating it as an actual emergency. And it just makes for this incredible contrast with this lackadaisical approach that they've taken on climate.
Yeah, So that was a really interesting conversation that I think is worth having, and that a lot of people are having during COVID about climate change and emissions due mm-hmm. to the fact that, you know, everyone says, well, we can't just stop driving cars. We can't just stop emitting this much. And it's like, well, COVID has sort of forced us to do that. So what now? How do we keep that up?
And I'm curious, at Sustainability Solutions Group, are there projects underway that you can point to that are COVID impact related?
That's like an ongoing conversation that we keep on having, even internally. Like, does this actually make a difference? Is the you know, the decrease in emissions that we've seen this year enough to make a long-term impact? And so far, the data shows that no, not really. Mm-hmm. If we want to actually, you know, stop climate change, there has to be constant, consistent policies, laws even, that keep governments on track. And Seth's argument in his book is that everything has to be top down. So government sort of forces all the cities and legislates everything that should happen. Whereas at SSG, maybe due to our co-op nature as a like bottom-up organization, we tend to look at it more as in like, no, let's see what cities can do. Let's see what, you know, the tiniest municipalities and community groups can start doing and how that trickles upwards and spreads. So, yeah.
Trickle up?
What, trickle up.
What crazy talk is that?
Everyone knows trickle down is a hoax. So maybe trickle up will work.
I really am looking forward to talking more about trickle up theory with you in 2021. I know that we're reaching the end of our time and we still have many months to go. I'm just going to throw it out. I would love to hear from you, Vesta, about Value Co-op. There are a new artist cooperative started here in Vancouver. Do you want to put a couple minutes of that?
Yeah, sure thing. So Value Co-op, super interesting co-op. They've been trying to get started for, I think, more than a year now, and they finally got their start right in the middle of COVID. So that was an interesting discussion. They're a worker co-op made up of artists, but what makes them interesting is that they're all unionized artists. So Value is VALU, and it stands for Vancouver Artists Labor Union. And so it basically started as a bunch of union members trying to create a space for them to have even better working conditions than what their union was offering, but through sort of that backing of their union. And so I talked to Annie Canto, one of the people who, you know, was part of the co-op at their founding stages. And a clip that I took out from it is something that I've been wanting to talk about more, but I feel like I'm not doing a good job of, and maybe we should all trying to do more of this. And just sort of when we talk about diversity in the co-op sector, I feel like we always talk about, you know, whether there's a worker co-op or a consumer cooperative, but we almost never talk about the actual people's diversity, where they're from, the color of their skin, their gender, etc. And Value Co-op is explicitly trying to address those things. So maybe we can just hear what Annie has to say about that.
The other important part that we've been working through and keeping like part of our mandates the whole time is that our board, of course, is made up of worker owners as well, but also at least 50% Black, Indigenous, and people of color, especially with the history of being attached to union culture. It's such a complicated culture where race and nationality has been hugely problematic in that area. So that's one of our huge things that we talk about constantly, is how can we change that culture and use it to benefit people at all intersections, I guess.
Yeah, and also being located in the downtown east side historical Chinatown area must also be another consideration, right?
Yeah, on that note, there's one really fun collaboration I'd like to share real quick with. We actually exist in the Lim Sai Hoar Wak Benevolent Association building. It's really a beautiful building. It's on Corral Street, and it's been there, I might get this wrong, but I believe it's been in operation since 1900. Huh. So understanding how very important, like knowing where we are and what like institutions we get to lean on. One of our first collaborations has been to sort of use our artists' skills to help them archive their huge collection of historical documents and stories from all the elders that are part of that association. So that's been a really fun way to get to know where we are and how important that context is.
Yeah, so that was Annie Cantu from Value Co-op. And something, a fun fact is that they're based maybe like a 30-second walk from Co-op Radio in the downtown east side. So that was part of the context of her talking about, you know, being located in historical Chinatown.
Yeah, and I went to their website after the show, and they've got lots of cool artistic things you can buy online. So I bought a couple of handbags that I think my mom would appreciate, and a couple of t-shirts. So I'm hoping to pick those up in the next week or so. Nice. But you can order online. Looking at the wrapping up of our year, we had a few political shows. So Sandy, you interviewed the BC Green Party leader here, and yes. I wonder if you want to set us up for that one.
Yeah. You know, of course, in the middle of the pandemic, after, in BC, the Greens, NDP and Liberals, BC Liberals, were working so well together, collaborating and cooperating once the pandemic hit and singing each other's praises, and it was all going well in service of the people. John Horgan decided that, well, we have to have an election because really he wants a majority mandate. And he said that there was instability in the legislative assembly, which was a hoax because they were all getting along well. And he wanted to be done with minority government and the confidence and supply agreement with the Greens, which had put the NDP into power in 2017. So called an election, got his majority, and you know, and the rest is history. But in keeping with our focus on doing politics differently, collaboratively, working across party lines, I was very fortunate to secure an interview with Sonia Furstenau, the BC Green Party leader and member for Cowichan Valley. She became party leader just days before the election was called. And she talked about what she really, you know, hopes to see in the legislature going forward. Again, working across party lines, collaborating on behalf of serving the people of BC. Here's what she had to say.
When I talk about how we should be thinking about health and well-being as the outcomes of government work and policy and legislation, you know, that also has to be reflected in how we ourselves are operating. And when we come back to the idea of collaboration in the legislature, that is not a place typically that has been one that creates health and well-being. No. I mean, it is a deeply partisan and you know, contentious and adversarial place. And it's, you know, I've now been there 3.5 years and I've just been determined at every step to say, I'm not accepting that this is how we have to be. We can be different. And one of the stories that I like to tell is that Mary Polak, who was the environment minister when I was here in Shawnigan, doing the efforts around our landfill, she and I both ended up as house leaders, in the mm-hmm. previous government and became friends over the course of those 3.5 years, colleagues, friends. We worked on a lot of policies around the Legislative Assembly Management Committee together. And you know, I people would always say, oh, you two must be enemies. And it's like, no, we're colleagues. We're both here in service to our communities and the province. There is so much more common ground between us, all of us in that building, than there is what divides us. And yet what we focus on is what divides us. And I, you know, I've really been thinking about this the last few weeks that we need to go get out of our adolescence, our political adolescence, and we need to mature and we need to be grown-ups at a time like this. And we really need to reflect back to British Columbians that our political interests are always going to come after our service to the people of this province.
Brilliant. Yeah, so we're looking for more of that going forward from the NDP majority, from John Horgan. He did say he was going to create an inclusive legislature. We haven't quite seen that yet at the tail end of 2020, but we'll hope for that, because all 87 MLAs have ideas to contribute, and we have to get back to that collaborative work in order to face the very difficult challenges that British Columbians have moving through the pandemic. So it was great to talk with Sonia Furstenow. It was a thrill, and really appreciate her sharing her values and that of the BC Green Party.
Well, I always appreciate you bringing such a diverse political agenda to Each for All, Sandy. So thanks for connecting with them. We also had Jenny Kwan, our MP from East Vancouver, on to talk about housing and specifically the challenges in the co-op housing, all the mortgages expiring and the subsidies from the federal government also expiring there. So hopefully there'll be some movement on that in the new year, although it might be after another federal election, but we'll see.
Which is COVID-19 prompted a real gardening renaissance this year, with people, you know, being concerned about having a safe and secure and local food supply. And people took up gardening from all age groups and really got going on flowers and food and whatever. And so we did have a check-in with Heather Pritchard of Foodlands Cooperative. Farmers markets were sort of set up to be COVID friendly and distanced and all of that, but they kept going. And we spoke to the BC EcoSeed Co-op in the fall, and the value, the importance of, you know, good seeds that are grown here that can adapt to our environment. And again, they're doing tremendous work. They're a producer co-op of a number of farmers growing, you know, good seeds for the people of British Columbia. So we hope the gardening renaissance will continue.
Yeah, and I'm sure it will. I've got grand plans for the small 3 feet of soil that I have.
Right, even a container. It all works.
But it is inspiring to see people engaging in, you know, growing their own food, their own herbs or whatever. And the BC Seed, the EcoSeed Co-op is really interesting story as well. Thanks for bringing that to the airwaves. We are going to have to wrap it up. I do want to just kind of leave on a note of collaboration. I feel like we, as you talked about earlier, we're connecting with other organizations to help produce radio. Right at the end of the year, we connected with one of the people working at the BC Co-op Association. Eva Yankovic has been producing a new podcast, also similarly themed to Each for All, called The Common Denominator, and looking to have her voice on the air more in the new year. We had her right at the end of December there. Thank you all for all of the efforts that you've put in to 2020 here on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. And it's been so wonderful to work with you. Thank you.
Ditto. It's great to be part of the of our cooperative. And we really look out for each other. We work together. We, you know, produce stories. We support each other as friends, as colleagues. And it's just wonderful. So I'm very thankful for all of you in my life. Don't mean to be sappy here, but it's from my heart. And we're telling great stories. And it's wonderful to do that all together as part of this team.
Absolutely.
I feel the same way. And thanks again, Sandy, so much for helping us, or rather for keeping us going this year. I just feel like just got me talking to so many people that I otherwise wouldn't have. And I just had some really interesting conversations with them. And it's because of you.
Well, there's lots more people to talk to. So we're into a new year, lots of ideas, lots of, it's really just about people helping people. And as I say, solving problems in their communities in innovative ways and coming together. So those are what can be better than telling those stories, right? So let's keep doing it.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to have fresh voices. Hopefully Eva will contribute some more this year. And I guess we'll see what happens. We've got a whole new year ahead of us.
Right on.
It's been a pleasure working with everyone and definitely looking forward to a better 2021.
In good health for everybody.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a show.
Okay. And we're done?
Yeah, we're massively over, like 20 minutes over.
Do you think we can cut it into two shows? Would you like to do that?
I'll see. Or I'll give it an edit tonight or tomorrow, and then see.
You have to throw in station ID and things like that. I don't know. Like, we could make it into two shows with, you know, tunes and whatever. Why not?
I'm totally game. Right. I've still got that 10-minute thing from the person. So that is it for us tonight on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. 2020 was a heck of a year. And 2021 is shaping up to be another doozy, I guess. So I really appreciate you listening to us tonight and for getting some information into your bubble from us here at Vancouver Co-op Radio. We wish you and your bubble members the best of health and happiness this year. And remember to be kind to yourself and to each other, to wash your hands. And we cannot thank enough the frontline workers out there doing what they can to make our lives easier every day. Thank you. If you missed any of the stories you heard tonight, do check out our website, eachforall.coop. Join us next week for more stories from the cooperative sector here on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM in Vancouver, live online at cooperadio.org.
It appears President Trump doesn't want to be a New Yorker anymore. Court documents show he and First Lady Melania have changed their permanent address to Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Palm Beach, Florida.
Start spreading the news. Trump's leaving today. He wants to be apart from it. New York, New York, go tell the fake news. He's longing to stray, just like he's done on every wife. Uno, dos, and tres. I want to wake up in a city without a Trump. And let him stay in Palm Beach at his tacky gold dump, his W-2s are holding the clues of all the sleazy deals he's cut in old New York. Trump's time now, here is done. I hope he takes his sons and Rudy to New York.